Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to another edition of Life Behind Bars. I'm Noah Rothbaum, the Daily Beast half-full editor. Joining me, as always, is my colleague and co-host, David Wongerich. How are you, Dave?
Hey, Noah. How are you?
All right. Week whatever this is, sheltered at home.
Crazy.
Getting used to drinking from my home bar exclusively instead of going out has been definitely a real change, I think, for both of us.
It has.
I've been joking. I've been stocking up for a big event, but I didn't realize that it would actually happen. that we would need all of the provisions that we've been stockpiling by accident.
Turns out the event I was stocking up for would have to be a lot bigger than this. I'm really not drawing down the booze as much as I would like to.
And you're trying. I know you're trying, but your nightly cocktail class for all of your Twitter followers, your lo-fi lush cocktail hour. So
yeah, every day, you know, without fail. God help me. I've been making a drink and taking little pictures of it and showing people how I made it in case that would be useful to them.
Judging by our Twitter feeds and what I see from, you know, folks who own liquor stores and other places, liquor store sales are skyrocketing. People are definitely making more drinks at home. You know, the happy hour, according to news reports, is definitely back. And I think you and I have seen that anecdotally from our friends and family.
The fact that when Stanley Tucci made one, you know, not particularly suave Negroni, and it just blew up the internet.
It broke the internet, I'd say. You know, it was like he was making a Negroni. I know he, you know, a lot of folks were irate because he shook his Negroni. I think your comments were the best about his cocktail skills. Would you say if I'm just glad he doesn't judge my Hamlet, I think was your tweet?
Yeah, exactly. What I learned is amusing is doing this lo-fi lush hour every day is, you know, I'm fairly active on Twitter and I have a lot of followers who are into cocktails as a result. And it turns out there aren't that many people who are confident mixing drinks other than the professional bartender. And I thought people were mixing a lot more drinks at home, but it turns out, you know, they went out, they bought some booze, they bought the gear, you know, they got a cocktail shaker of some kind and some other stuff. And they might make one drink every now and then, right, when they've got people over or something. But they're not really making a lot of drinks. And so now they're suddenly thrown on their own resources with skills that are really unfamiliar. And that was kind of a surprise to me.
Sort of what we saw with Prohibition, that during Prohibition, you know, people, you know, the sales of cocktail shakers kind of go through the roof, right?
Yeah.
People weren't making drinks at home before. If you wanted a drink, you'd go out to a bar. And most of the people who went to bars then were men. And, you know, drinking was totally different than you know, what we do today.
The only thing that gives me pause about this moment and the home mixology is I've spent the last 20 years, you know, writing articles showing people how to mix drinks. And so have, you know, millions of other writers. And it turns out they were not paying any attention at all.
I think it's kind of like, you know, home renovation magazines or, you know, or restaurant magazines or food magazines, I should say, where people like to read, page through them, look at all the possibilities, but they don't actually, you know, they may not do it themselves, but they like fantasizing about
it.
And I think, you know,
I mean, I think they make the occasional drink and, you know, and it helps them to figure out what they want to order when they go out to a bar. But, you know, making drinks takes a little practice and a little time to get set up. And I guess unless you're really forced into it, nobody really wants to do it.
Like cooking, I think everybody has one or two things that they like to cook. You know what I mean? And then, you know, they order takeout. And kind of the same thing with cocktails where, you know, we have our favorite bars and restaurants where we like to drink and eat. And then at home, we have our few favorite things that we like. And then, you know, that's enough. But now that, like, we can't really go out and, I mean, fortunately, in some parts of the country, some bars and restaurants are doing to-go cocktails, but that's still a small amount of establishments. So it's, for most of us, we're left to our own devices to fix our own cocktails, for and, better or for worse.
Those three drinks that you are good at, that's week one.
Right. If anything, I think we're going to come out of this with people who are way more confident and way more, you know, familiar with what the different spirits taste like on their own and familiar with what they like and they don't like, and, you know, way more confident whenever bars reopen and they can go back in there and really kind of order with more authority and confidence.
I like the optimistic take. And I think, you know, you think of the generation that came out of Prohibition, those people never had any problem making cocktails at home through the 50s and, you know, they were making complicated tiki drinks at home and all that kind of stuff.
That's true.
You know, they always had the martini in the freezer and all that kind of thing. So, you know, that's not a bad thing.
And they're certainly opinionated. I mean, if you go by something like Bernard DeVoto's The Hour, he has a lot of opinions about how drinks should and certainly should not be made. So,
yeah, I mean, most of them are stupid, but it's an amazing book. But, you know.
Yes.
I don't agree with it.
nor do I. But, like, you know, I find it one that's pretty hard to get through in more than a page or two at a sitting.
He was writing it for effect. And, you know, I guess we'll probably see that. We're going to get some new home experts, you know, people who've mixed, like, God knows how many, you know, 60, 80 drinks all of a sudden. And that's that. It's very different if you're mixing drinks every day and are getting comfortable with it. Those people are going to, some of them are going to go on to be like a real pains in the ass for their bartenders.
Yeah. Like I
mean, in a good way, but it's funny.
That is true. The unintended consequence of, you know, 3 months of home mixology.
Maybe I should, stop the Lo-Fi Lush Hour right now.
Now, exactly. People coming in with all of the, you know, all of your Italian bitters and vermouth and stuff that you've been using, and
yeah,
asking for all these obscure things that they saw on your Twitter feed. Who knows?
Well, you know, I try not to make them too obscure, but every once in a while, I can't help it. But I mean, I've been trying to mix drinks so that there's a path for most people. You know, but you do need to have some vermouth and some citrus around. That's basic mixology, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we've done a couple of, you know, online or Instagram kind of talks about cocktails or whiskey. And, you know, I keep preaching, like, you know, things like the sour formula, right? Where, you know, it's one formula, but, you know, it's plug and play. So we've talked about this before in other episodes, but, like, you know, you use tequila, it's a margarita. You use rum, it's a daiquiri. It's usually just two parts spirit, one part sweetener, one part citrus, lemon or lime, obviously, depending upon how strong your citrus is or what kind of sugar you're using or, you know, how strong the alcohol is, you vary it slightly. But that one formula can make dozens of different drinks of, you know.
Oh, particularly if you've got a bottle of liqueur lying around, you know.
Yeah.
That really makes that kicks things into orbit. I've been trying to encourage people to experiment, you know, and just say, if you don't have this ingredient, try something else.
Right.
What's the harm? You know, it's not going to poison you. It might not taste great, but it might taste really good. You never know.
And that's kind of the beauty of it. And also you can make mistakes and you can drink things that I think a lot of folks drink out of fear when they're in a bar, right? They're worried that the bartender is going to judge them or their friends or another patron, and they're going to ask them, why are you drinking that? And they're not going to have any reason to say X, or, you know, they're not going to be able to say, you know, I like it because it's, you know, whatever. So at home, we don't have any of that. You know, we at home, you can drink whatever you want at any time you want. So, you know, hopefully that, you know, is a little bit of an easier environment to experiment, or, you know, you've always heard about a certain drink, but you've never been comfortable enough to order it. Well, now's the time to mix it up at home and see if you like it or not.
I've been surprised with the, you know, the lo-fi response for some of these episodes where I have a real classic drink that's just as, you know, plain as anything. And the number of people who've never tried it, you know, the number of people who, you know, never tried a pink gin, for instance.
Right.
That's just gin and bitter. And it's really easy. And it's, a famous drink.
And usually high proof gin, right? I mean,
it can be. Like, I mean, originally, I think it was mostly Plymouth gin. Yeah. And that wasn't super high. Can use a high proof gin. You know, that's always an option, Noah.
Or maybe I drink with too many.
Day.
Right. Maybe I've drunk with too many bartenders, but it's often like, you know, the Navy strength gin, which is what, 114 or whatever it is for Plymouth.
Yeah.
And that's one hell of a shot. Let me tell you, Angostura bitters and that. You don't need another drink for a while.
But. No.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Oh.
You and I travel so much. It is weird to be not having to worry about, you know, getting to the airport on time, TSA times, you know, packing, unpacking.
Yeah.
You know, none of, you know, making reservations, hotels, none of that. I mean, it all seems quite quaint at this point.
I know. But also it's, you know, there's no going and finding that one 1940s tiki bar in Phoenix and going to the place that has the great tacos and going for a walk from my hotel in the morning and, you know, exploring neighborhoods I've never seen before and all that kind of thing. So, absolutely.
You miss, I mean, that's the most wonderful part of traveling. I mean, it's right there.
Yeah, it's the stuff I take for granted.
Absolutely. We all do. I mean, and you and I do it so often that in so many places around the country, the world, we have our favorite spots and our favorite bartenders and our favorite servers. And, you know, I miss them dearly. I mean, I miss, you know, that luxury and the obviously the personal, the social aspect of it and going out. And I mean, booze, we have plenty of booze at home. I mean, I think Wayne Curtis said that in a recent story in Half Full. It's like we all have plenty of booze, hopefully, at home. And we, you know, getting a good cocktail is not the problem. It's all the other stuff that we miss. It's seeing our friends and interacting with folks and hearing, as our late, great Gary Regan would say, the crack in the bar, you know,
the hum of conversation. It's the, you know, the bartender tossing a wisecrack as she walks by, and you know, it's that idea of like, what should I have now? Why don't you make me something? It's the what have you got back there? I've never seen that.
Yeah,
you know, every bottle of booze in my house I've seen before. Every cocktail recipe in the house I've heard of, because it's, you know, it's in one of my books that I either wrote or bought.
Right. So you know, we spend so much time obsessing about the right ingredients and the right recipes and the technique. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, you know, being, you know, sheltered at home or quarantined, we realize kind of what it all boils down to, you know, and you know, it can be,
none of that stuff is very important.
No. And so many of these, you know, I don't miss the 12 ingredient cocktails. You know, I miss, you know, a good old fashioned or a daiquiri and some talk at the bar with my friends. Yeah. And, you know,
I didn't care that Stanley Tucci shook his Negroni or, you know, dissed a vermouth that I use a lot or and anything like that. The only thing I objected to was the fact that he didn't give his wife the drink at the end.
Oh,
you know,
right. Well, I mean, that's right. I mean, that's,
you know, because that's what it's about.
Oh, for
it's
sure.
It's about people.
I think if you're fortunate enough to be sheltered at home with another adult, that you absolutely should be making drinks for two.
That's right.
That's the golden rule.
Yeah, there's no such thing as drinks for one.
No, I don't. I think that's that breaks some kind of every rule of hospitality. I mean,
although I have to say, Lo-Fi Lush Hour, I always make one drink, but then I usually give that to my wife or make right. another one for her.
Yeah, I think most people who follow along with that realize it's not the only drink that you're making that night. I don't think.
Yeah.
It'd be pretty. It's like some kind of Neil Simon play where, you know, two people in one apartment who aren't talking to each other for this whole thing, and one person just keeps making cocktails in the corner, you know, and just drinking them themselves, you know?
Sucking them down.
Yeah, like, are you done with the shaker now? Can I borrow the shaker? Thank you. Like, you used all the ice.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, we could. My wife, daughter, and I could each have our own fully equipped bar.
I don't think that's a problem somehow. It's put a lot of this in perspective, you know, and
it really has.
I mean, we look at recipes or we look at the bottles, and I mean, obviously I see drinks or spirits, but we also see all the people that we know who, you know, make them. I mean, it's their stories, it's their families, it's their histories. That's
absolutely.
It reminds us of that, you know. Sometimes it's quite soothing to remember all the, you know, the lovely folks behind, you know, these drinks, and sometimes it hurts because I realize I'm not sure when I'm going to see them again. So
yeah, I mean, some of these drinks, you know, when I made the Pegu Club the other day, and boy, that was emotional, you know.
Yeah,
because I always drink that at Pegu Club, and that's not going to happen anymore.
No,
and I've been drinking there for 15 years since it opened, and always thought that it was just a magical place. And I'm really, you know, New York without it is just going to be a little bit diminished.
Yeah, I guess.
And
just
realizing that that's just one of many, you know, that we're going to lose is really tough.
Yeah, Audrey Saunders, the founder of Pegu Club, co-owner, announced he wasn't going to reopen her bar as one of the first major cocktail bars in New York, not the first, but, you know, the first generation, and, you know, on Houston Street, and so many wonderful bartenders who now work all over the country and have their own bars came through Pegu Club. And, you know, Audrey, you know, I wrote a profile for her, I guess, last year, and it was a wonderful excuse to write, you know, a long story, and B, just also spend time with Audrey, even on the phone, you know, talking about what I thought then were the good old days, right? You know, when she was coming
right.
up, you know, she'd worked, I think, at a carpet cleaning company with her, you know, her ex-husband, and she sort of fell and took an adult education bartending class with Dale DeGroff and kind of fell in love with it and became one of Dale's disciples. Dale, obviously, the Reaper, who was on our Gary Regan episode a couple of weeks ago. Obviously, Dale, the father of the rebirth of the cocktail, who's taught all of us so much. And Audrey was, you know, really one of his first students and, you know, passed that knowledge on to so many other folks. So,
you know, Pegu Club, when it opened, it was kind of taken as, certainly how I took it and a lot of other people did, as proof of concept.
Absolutely.
As that you could make an absolutely meticulous classic cocktail bar that's big and doesn't seem fussy. You know,
but you're right. 15 years ago, there's no guarantee that that would work or that this whole cocktail thing would work.
There were a couple other bars doing craft cocktails, sort of, you know, and then there were a couple that were very small that were definitely doing them, but they were small bar.
Yeah.
And, you know, there were some big ones that were fairly high volume that were doing craft-ish cocktails, but they weren't, you know, necessarily going all the way down the line. Audrey was, where
just
perfection. And
yeah. Well, I mean, that's Audrey. I mean, Audrey's obsessive. Like, you know, I remember talking to Kenta Goto, who, you know, was the bar manager at Pegu for a long time. And, you know, now he runs his own bars, Bar Goto and Bar Goto Nippon. And, you know, talking just about how Audrey would, you know, work on a drink like well beyond what, you know, a normal, you know, what would normally take place in most bars, you know, and like, so then
he makes 60 different versions, right? You know, and I'm not kidding.
I mean, I remember, you know, when my first book came out, The Business of Spirits in 2007, I included, I think, six bars or something. And it was like Flatiron Lounge. I think Pegu was in there. I can't even remember, but it was one of these things where it was like, I thought we had, you know, reached the top of the mountain. We had like five, six bars that were great bars in New York, you know, and it was like, how much could this get better? You know, how could this ever get better than these six bars? And it's like, well, we, you know, now we have, how, I don't know how many dozens of good bars in New York and around the world.
You know, sadly, we'll see how many dozen when things start opening again. And you know, unfortunately, we're going to lose a lot of them for a while. I mean, I'm optimistic that eventually it will come back to some, you know, maybe not exactly the same. There's some things I hope will happen, that I hope there'll be a little more attention to the basics in these bars and a little less to weird mixology for the sake of weirdness, you know, and or for competitive mixology, which I find tiresome. Is like, well, my drink, I did 18 different homemade things, you know, so top that. The simplicity of that you find in classics, you know, I would like to see that in new drinks some, at least. And I suspect we'll see that that is going to happen to a degree, because the bars are going to have to be a little more, a little low to the ground to get people in there.
Yeah, I think it's going to have to be. I think we'll see big changes. I mean, just, I mean, in the near term as we adjust, and then once, you know, a vaccine, you know, is approved and works, then, you know, I mean, I do think in the long run we'll go back to normal. But it's just how many bars will be able to weather this period until they're able to reopen completely and normally, I don't know. And how many bartenders and other people in this industry will leave the industry because there's nothing, you know, there's so few jobs
nothing there.
In the meantime. So, I mean, that's the scary thing. I mean, just as we saw after Prohibition, you know, the American whiskey industry was decimated. I mean, there was no, you know, there were a few handful of people who had the medicinal distilling licenses who were able to continue to sell whiskey.
Yeah, there were like four distilleries.
Right. But the rest of them, but even them, and most of them, you know, most of the distilleries had to be rebuilt. A lot of them had been, you know, scrapped for, you know, money.
I don't think we're facing that.
No. But I mean, you know, the point is like other people stepped in, you know, it was an opportunity for other people who, you know, who hadn't been involved, who came in, like the folks, like the Shapiros at Heaven Hill, you know, they had been running their chain of Louisville stores and, you know, had the money, because even during the Depression, people, Max Shapiro, the president now, says people needed socks or a zipper or a button or something. So yeah,
precisely,
they had the money. The Beams had the knowledge. You know, Jim Beam also found the investors. I mean, so other people will step up and we'll see it. But I mean, it's, you know, it's going to change the landscape.
Yeah, I think the people, the people and just the bars and also some of the small distilleries that we're going to see making it through are the ones that are most connected to their communities.
Yeah.
Know that will have that have reservoirs of goodwill and affection for them, because they're going to need that to get, you know, people to work with their new normal, whatever that is.
Yeah, I agree.
The places that are just like investors plus hired consultants, I don't think that's going to come back so much, but because there's really no base there. But the places that are deeply embedded in their community, people will find a way to get them back
in one way
or another. It might be in a different building with a different name, but it'll be the same people. You know, the customers, they're not going to lose those customers because they're a part of people's lives. And not just a fun night out.
I don't worry that there will be bars, right? I think we can all agree that there will always be bars and there are always people to open bars. If this drags on too long, it's going to be really, really, it's going to be devastating. I mean, it's going to be terrible.
It's
going to
be smaller industry. It's going to be a more low to the ground. On the other hand, there's a possibility that rents are not going to, you know, commercial rents right. aren't going to be what they were. So, you know, there's a possibility that some of these bars, you know, might go the kind of the neighborhood bar way.
Yeah.
In a way that was not possible before. So we'll, you know, we'll see what happens from that. I mean, the last time there was a really bad economy for a long time, we got a lot of dive bars out of it. So, you know.
Yeah, that's true. You know, if the government steps in and freezes rents or, you know, pays for people's rents, you know, that would also affect things, obviously. But I mean, you know, who knows? We don't know yet. So
we don't know. I mean, in the meanwhile, all we could do is stay home and mix our drinks, you know, and
pray for
the best.
Yeah.
Be willing to help where we can. You know, that's the most important thing of anything is, you know, try to keep your sanity and be willing to help when you can.
Absolutely.
I don't know what else we can do, how you can and when you can.
I look forward to seeing you all at a bar, including you, Dave. Hopefully that is sooner than later.
I can't wait.
And the
first round's on me.
Absolutely. I'll hold you to it.
You got it.
Till then, stay safe, everybody. Keep the drinks flowing at home. Hopefully it brings you some solace. We'll hopefully all meet up soon.
Cheers. I'll drink to that too.
Cheers.
Dave and I encourage you to drink responsibly always.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.